Wow, thank you so much, Sarah and Ashlyn. Beautiful. You know, I was, during that last worship song, I was picturing the look of Jesus as he looks out over all of us this evening. And I just saw how filled with delight he is. I saw a twinkle in his eye. And I saw just this delight and joy that you are here, hungry and thirsty and longing for more of him. And he's here with us, and I am expectant. I'm expectant as we begin this weekend together of what he has to say to you in unexpected ways all throughout this time together. What struck me, too, about this evening is the different generations. We have people from 20s, 30s, 40s, 60s. There's going to be some 50s, some women in their 50s teaching seminars. My mom's 75. She's gorgeous. She's here with me. Sorry, I'm just, she doesn't mind. And I know there's women in their 80s and maybe even 90s. I'm thinking, how amazing is this that women from all across the generations are here together in this space? This is a unique opportunity as we come together. It's a unique opportunity for us to actually hear from each other. I would really encourage you this weekend, if you're here with someone who is maybe in a different generation than you are, a different decade, would you take some time out this weekend to just ask them, in this season of your life, what is your greatest joy? And in this season of your life, what is your greatest challenge? How much can we learn from each other in this powerful space together? Let's enjoy that. Let's go deep around the table, the sacred space around tables and in our rooms at night together. Let's get to know one another and learn from one another in the seasons. Let's listen to each other. I think that could be really powerful. That wasn't in my notes, sisters. That was just all for free. Okay, so I wanted to start by just giving you a picture of my family, because sometimes when I hear a speaker, I'm like, so who, like, where is she? Who is she? Like, what is going on, right? So this is my family. My husband, Doug, he and I have been married for 22 years. Yes. And I married my opposite. So he's very right-brained and creative and artistic, and I'm much more left-brained and logical, so I do the money and the taxes. Just a little tidbit. And then my daughter is my firstborn daughter, Grace. She's 19. My second, she's the only baby I ever got to carry in my womb, and it was wonderful. And then I, through years and years of secondary infertility that was heart-wrenching, faith-shifting, absolutely the most painful season of my life. But after that, God led us to foster adoption. And that is how Kayla Joy came into our family almost 12 years ago this year. So that's how she joined our family. And then we have a 2-year-old that I'll tell you about in a little bit. But this has basically been my life. So no one else can relate to this, right? This is what we want for our lives. We want this, we have this plan, and we want it to go that way. But what happens is, where is God? God is in the right side. He's in all the funk of our life. He's in the disappointment and the unexpected blessing. He's in the brutal times and in the most beautiful times. He's when things go according to plan and when things go terribly out. He is there in it with you and present through it all, writing a story through your life. His story through your life. I think so many of us, some of us who are mothers, we want that first picture on the left for our kids. But that's not how life is. So get your hands off and let God do his thing, because it's going to be like this. This is where God meets us, in the stories, the real stories of our life, not the ideal picture. That picture that I showed you was one moment of 2018. Let's be real. I would not want a snapshot of a couple nights ago, let me tell you. Well, I love Mount Hermon. I'm so glad to be here in this space with you. I actually took a picture. I didn't take a picture, but I grabbed a picture. Isn't that gorgeous? There's something when I like enter the grounds and I roll my window down and breathe the scent in. Yes. Something about my spirit just settles. And it's like, you know that you have been invited by the God of the universe into an intimate weekend of connection with him in this space. One of the things I love about Mount Hermon is the trees. How many of you love trees? I love trees. There's something so beautiful about them. In fact, my favorite tree, my favorite book is The Giving Tree. I've always loved trees, but I think especially my brother gave this book to me 20 years ago when I was pregnant with my first baby. And he said, he calls me Christy. He said, to Christy, mommy, may your giving be like this tree so that your children will go to the creator of the tree for all things. There's something, ever since I was a child, that book made me cry. Is it just me? And every time I read it to my kids, I'm blubbering through it. They're like, mom, what is the deal? Some people think it's like, that tree is so codependent. Like, have some boundaries, you know? but for me, I see the tree as this love, what love is sacrificed so often at the time. It's this, and to me, the tree really is, the way the tree loves the boy, sorry if you haven't read it, you can borrow it after. The way the tree gives everything for the boy, for the love of the boy, to be near the boy, this is how Jesus loves us. And I wonder if that, I wonder if I've always known that when I read this story. It's like something in it. I know that this is a metaphor of the way Jesus goes after me and goes after you. So beautiful. Trees, they teach us so many things. We can observe so many things by looking and being surrounded and soaking in trees. So what I want to do, this is really dangerous because it's a woman of 500 women. I'm going to ask you to talk to each other for a second. And then I'm going to try to rein you back in, which is the challenging part. That's what I am. The talking part's not a problem. So I wanted you to consider, when you look at a tree, when you think about trees, what are some of the things that you can learn from the life of a tree? Okay? Now, I'm very left-brain logical, so I can do this. So get outside. You're like, just get, go. Okay, what can I learn from a tree? Go. Talk to each other. Talk amongst yourselves. Okay, so, all right. Okay, ladies. I could start singing. What's a song about a tree? I don't know. Oh, thank you, that was not too bad. Okay, I have an idea. Carrie, come on down. Just for a couple minutes, I would love to hear some of the things from you that you can learn from a tree. Does anyone want to tell me what? Just real quick. Does anybody want us to share? Oh, there's one. Okay. What can you learn from a tree? Life requires light, and you cannot grow in the dark. Gorgeous. Thank you. See what I'm talking about back there? Oh, we need two. Jennifer. Okay, good. Woo!
Grow deep roots,
she said. Okay, good. Awesome. Yes. What's that?
Soil.
Soil is important.
I was kind of, not to take away from the first person, but I said that roots grow in the darkness and there cannot be growth without darkness in our lives.
Beautiful. Yes, both and.
I was just going to say.
Carrie. Oh. Okay, hold on.
Surviving.
Wait a second. Over here.
The trees consist of very strong branches and very weak branches.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, over here.
Surviving different seasons.
Yes. In front of you, Jennifer, to your right.
Most trees need to be pruned in order to grow well.
I don't even need to say anything tonight, just FYI. Yeah, okay.
They're more beautiful with imperfections than they are when they're perfect.
Mm. Gorgeous. Yes, over here.
Pine trees reproduce through fire. Their seeds are released through fire, and that's the only way they reproduce is through fire.
What tree is that?
Pines, sequoias.
Wow. Yeah.
Very biblical, into the fire.
Yes, okay. Powerful. I feel like we could go all night. Let's do two more. Okay.
So when I look at trees, this is loud. So when I look at trees, I connect with God in nature a lot. And so when I look at trees, I think about how they grow up towards heaven, almost like they're praising the Lord.
Yes.
It's kind of how I...
like they lift their hands.
Yeah. And I just reminded of the scripture where it says, even if you don't praise me, the rocks will cry out. Like basically nature will cry out to me.
Beautiful.
That's how I look at it.
Beautiful. Love it. Okay, one more.
They're giving and they produce or bear fruit.
Yes.
Papers. Shelter.
Yes.
Yeah.
They provide all kinds of things for us. Yes. Beautiful. Thank you so much. I love, thank you, Jennifer and Carrie as well. I appreciate it. There's some of my reflections as I think about a tree. Trees show us that transformation happens in cycles that involve death, burial, and resurrection. They show us that much of life is being rooted in the right environment and being nurtured by what is life-giving. They show us that anything truly magnificent takes years to grow and change and develop, which means the best is yet to come. They show us that we don't need to strive and hustle to be absolutely glorious. We need only to be still. That's why I wear trees all over my body. Because I need to be reminded to be still and to receive from God all that he wants to give. This is counterculture. This is counter to the culture in which we live, where we can't even sit and be still when we're in line for Starbucks. We have to plug in and connect and see what's happening and scroll through. I read a book the other day called Making All Things New by John Eldridge, and he talks about how he thinks we're obsessed with checking email and phone because we're looking for good news. That resonated with me. Ooh, I went, oh, maybe I won $5,000. I don't know. What is it, the good news that we're looking for? But I think that we as human beings are always longing for good news. And so I think that's maybe why we just have this obsessive need to be connected. Rather than being rooted where we are in that space, looking up and around for what God might be saying or doing in that space, we go somewhere else. You know, even traffic lights. we can't sit at a traffic light. How about the way that we care for our bodies? I don't know about you, but I like 2 workouts and like eat good for 3 days. And why doesn't the scale show something different, right? What's up? I'm not in my perfect jeans. I've just been working out a week, right? We want it now. That's why I love to sit in the presence of a tree, because it's all about time. It's all about becoming. It's all about small things. I love that. I think we do this in a lot of ways in our relationships. We decide to change the way that we interact and we practice kindness, and it doesn't come right back to us. Well, forget it then. I tried. Are there any other slammers in there? that's another story. Okay. What about mothering? Children are like trees, and we want them to just be all together and glorious and reaching their branches out. We need to have a long view of our children as these trees that God is transforming through all kinds of different seasons, writing a story through their lives that we may not understand. Scripture uses the metaphor of a tree again and again and again to inspire us in our own relationship with God, to give us a picture of what a fruitful, peaceful, joy-filled life of trust, what it looks like to be rooted in all the seasons of life. I love it. Colossians 2:7 says, "Let your roots grow down into him and let your lives be built on him. Then your faith will grow strong in the truth you were taught and you will overflow with thankfulness." And so God, I pray that tonight we, each of us in this room, would get in touch with our rootedness in you. That every single woman in this space would dig her roots deep down into your marvelous love. I pray that you would give each of us a fresh revelation of your love. I pray that you would give each of us a word straight from your heart to ours. Speak to us, Jesus. Speak to us. Come and have your way in this space. And Father, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing in your sight. Oh Lord, my strength and my redeemer. In Jesus' name. Well, tonight, I want to touch on this idea of being rooted. Throughout the weekend, we'll talk about different things to be rooted in. First is an invitation to be rooted in truth. What would it be like if you were rooted in the truth about what God says and thinks and feels about you? This is a lifelong journey for the ones who follow Jesus, to continue to live into this truth of who he says we are, but it's difficult. It's nearly impossible to hear God, the way God sees us or what he thinks about us, if we don't know where we're coming from, if we're not honest with ourselves, where we're at. In fact, John Calvin, this is fascinating. There is no deep knowing of God without a deep knowing of self, and no deep knowing of self without a deep knowing of God. These go together. There's a story that I want to take you to, one of my favorite stories in the Gospels tonight, and it's found in Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 52, and I'm going to read that to you tonight. I'm going to read it to you from a Bible that my mother gave me on my 30th birthday, and then she took it back and said, I'm going to pray through this Bible for you for 10 years and write notes in it. And then she gave it to me wrapped up on my 40th birthday. So isn't that beautiful? Maybe you could do that for someone. It doesn't have to be your daughter. What a precious gift. And that's the Bible I'm reading from tonight. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, that is the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more. I love that. Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said, tell him to come here. So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet. He's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, my rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus. Your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. I love this story. I think I love the energy of this blind Bartimaeus. You can sense his desperation, can't you? He's surrounded by people. He's shouting, he's begging, and then he's shouting for Jesus to come and notice him. He knows that this is his opportunity. And he calls him the son of David. So he knows that he's basically saying, you're the Messiah. You're the one we've been waiting for. Son of David is associated with his kingly title. So he knows this is a man with power. This is a man, and he knows that if he is here, it is my opportunity. It is my opportunity to get what I need most in this world, which is my sight. And you know what? He's like, I have this access to power, he's thinking. You have that access to power tonight. You have access to the power of the Son of the living God tonight in this space. In fact, Jesus said that when he left, he would do greater things after he ascended to the Father than he did when he was here. Jesus is able and willing to move in power in your life. Be quiet, the people said to him. Be quiet. Shh. The people wanted him to behave. They wanted him to stuff it, to accept the way things were, to not embarrass him or them. And I think that too often we're taught that God can't handle our honesty. He can't handle for us to come to him in this kind of wild desperation shouting at him. That we have this lie that we believe that we have to get all cleaned up first. How many people have you heard say, you have to come, if I enter a church, what would happen? I'd be a lightning bolt. Right? Have you heard anyone? I've heard people say that. I could never enter a church. Because they are believing the lie that says before they come to Jesus, they have to do a bunch of things. That's the opposite of the way that it is with Jesus. You just come and you say, here I am. And he says, oh, well, I can work with that. In his blindness, he comes in boldness. In his blindness, he comes in boldness. And that's how we're invited to come. But the people just shush him. What does he do? He gets louder, it says. He shouted louder. Son of David, have mercy on me. This is my kind of guy. Is there anyone else in the room that when people tell you to calm down, it does the opposite? Okay. Okay. You don't want to tell me to calm down. Not a good choice. I was around a room a couple years ago. I think I was the only woman around the table, and I was passionately expressing something. I mean, in a very appropriate way. But a dear brother that I hadn't worked with for very long, he wasn't quite used to me yet. He started to say, calm down, before he could finish. I said, oh, and I, woo, was not pretty. And that's my own problem. I need to be a spirit-filled, respond in kindness. A gentle answer turns away wrath. I know this. But there's something about when someone tells me to calm down that it just riles me up. And I think it's because I feel silenced. And it's the worst thing for me is to feel silenced. And I think too often women have been silenced. Place a little too much over up in here. You need to calm down. You know, I heard a podcast that said the world wants us to shrink everywhere except here and here. Isn't that the truth? And so I think that's why I don't like to be told to calm down, because there is a generation of women who need to speak up, who need to come in their power and their boldness because of God's life in and through them. Come into spaces and fight for justice and peace and love. Woo, when I think about what could happen in this room, if you all stop playing small and decided to live into whoever God created you to be in your fullness, yes, filled with grace and filled with truth the way Jesus was. Let's not be shushed because other people are embarrassed about how desperate we are for a touch of Jesus. There she is. She's standing up. Jesus hears him, and he stops. Out of all the voices that Jesus hears, there's a lot of stuff happening. He's actually going into the city. Literally the next passage in this text is the triumphal entry. So you've got to know that Jesus had a lot on his mind. He had a lot on his mind. He was going to the cross, and he knew it was time. Have you ever had a time in your life when you're really stressed about something and you're really burdened and you really are carrying some major anguish? Do you have time to notice anyone else? I know me, when I have just minor stress, I can't hardly focus on anyone but myself. Jesus, fully human, yes, fully God, but fully human, and in his own situation, in his head and life. And he hears this man and he stops. Jesus, I love how he handled interruptions with such beauty and grace. He's moved by this man's pleas for mercy. He's moved by this desperation. He's moved with the oomph. He's moved by it. And I love, he calls to him. And what does Bartimaeus do? Throws off his coat. Like, nothing's going to hold me back. I don't want anything to slow me down. Jesus is calling me. I'm going to get rid of everything. I'm going to throw it off, and I'm going to run into the presence of Jesus. I just think that is such an invitation for us. Just throw it off. All the stuff that we think about God. I think one of the main things we need to throw off is all the misrepresentations of Jesus that we have. More than anything, a couple mornings ago, I was praying for our time together, and I was weeping, going, God, oh, please protect you from being misrepresented by me. I just wonder how many people are running the opposite way from Jesus because his people have misrepresented him. And so maybe someone's misrepresented who Jesus is to you tonight. So Jesus wants you to be rooted in the truth of who he really is and who you really are. It starts here with where we are. And I love how he says to Jesus, my rabbi. It's this intimate connection. You belong to me. You're mine. You are for me. You are for me, not against me. It seems like everyone else is kind of against this guy, right? Shh. You are a bother. We're so tired of your issues. We're so tired of your issues. It's been years, the same thing. I want to see. But that's how we treat each other, you know? Jesus says, go, your faith has healed you. Instantly the man can see because of the touch of Jesus, everything changes. When Jesus touches you, everything changes. And what does he do? He follows him. He follows Jesus. He wants to get in on his mission. And now he can see and he can follow him. Is it just me or is it a little ridiculous that Jesus asks a blind man, what do you want me to do for you? Does that seem a little, I mean, if we're being honest? I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious what this man needs. We're not talking about the modern era. We're talking about the first century, a blind beggar. It's very clear what he needs. And yet Jesus asks him to name his need. He asks him to name his need. And tonight, that is what I want to invite you to do, is to name your desire and your need. I believe he wants us to name our blindness, wherever it is, to be honest about where we are coming from tonight. Because if we're not honest about where we're coming from, we can't even hear his truth. Think about any relationship. If you're not honest with the other person about where you're at, you can act like, oh, okay, that's great. Oh, good, good, okay, we're all good, good. And is it really good? No, there's a big wall up. I think that too often we've been taught to pretend with Jesus. And so I think that Jesus makes it pretty clear that he wants us to be honest with him about what we need, about where we are, and then he can work with that. There are times, I think this is scary for us. Why is it scary to name our desires, to name our need? I think sometimes for me, it's because I'm scared about being disappointed. If I was to say what I really want and then it didn't happen, then I have to like deal with that. So I'm just going to keep it all locked up. The crazy thing is it's still there. There are other times when I'm not even aware of what is happening in my soul because I am a happy girl. So, hey, it's good. It's going to be good. All right. Well, it's good. That's good. Glass is half full. And you know what? That can be just as much of an escape as any other kind of thing. Yes, there's choosing joy. We're actually going to talk about that tomorrow. We choose a life of joy by practicing gratitude. But at the same time, that's different than false positivity that actually takes us away from where we really are. And I think it's a lot of that same spirit that says trite phrases to people that are in deep pain. It's that thing, we want to just make it all better. So we say something that actually the person now has to recover from that too. So now not only are they in grief, but some friend said, well, God has a better person around the corner for you. Someone told my friend who lost her husband, lost her her fiance, well, there's other fish in the sea. Who says this? A person who is not comfortable with sitting in pain and honesty about something not going the way that we wished and wanted it to go, and being okay and having the courage to sit with her in that pain. We have to have the courage, sisters, to sit with each other in the reality of where we are, not where we all think we should be. We don't come to church. What did Jesus said, I came for the sick. I came for people who need a doctor. And so we, as his followers, should be the people who are like, come on in. If you need some support, some help, if you're a mess, then this place is for you. Come on in. We're all a mess. Some of us just have better makeup. I am so serious. Or a mother who puts bling on you, you know? It's scary. It's scary to admit where our true need, our true desire. Other times, I think that I'm ashamed of what I'm feeling and I have to hide it. I think shame is one of the most insidious things that women deal with. And I think Jesus is like, I already took care of all that shame. I took it all on myself, so there's none left for you. So I think when we come away on a retreat like this, it's a moment for us to be able to reflect on where how we're really doing. Because honestly, some of us are just running. We are in survival mode because we have to be back home. Or we're just super busy. We've got tons of balls that we're juggling. And the thing that's so beautiful about coming, but you are here, and that means you get to take a minute to reflect, to remember, to renew, all the R-E words. To recreate, recreate. That's the opportunity. Don't miss out on this moment to sit with Jesus and be honest with him, because you know what? You could fill it all up here too. And I think Jesus is like, oh, I have some things I want to talk to you about, and I would just love a little time with you, or we could just, you know, just you and me. Take a chance this weekend to be honest with Jesus. Reflection is fundamental in our lives, and we live in the hardest time in history to have a reflective life. And it doesn't mean that human beings don't need it any less or don't need it anymore. Do the math, whatever way is the right way to say that. Oh, this is my bedtime, you know. All right. So... when we talk about just this idea of being honest with God about where we are, I just want to share a little bit more about my story. You heard a little bit about the way my family's been formed. We were foster parents. We are a licensed resource family in Alameda County. And while we had, it was my daughter Grace's senior year of high school. My daughter Kayla was 9, and we had a foster youth living with us that was Grace's age. That was fun. Two girls, seniors in high school with opposite personalities. But you know what? It was actually a really beautiful season. And I had decided to let go of a job that was very close to my heart, that actually was a lot of my identity. I found a lot of my identity in my work. And God was inviting me to lay that down. And so I was anticipating kind of a new season with Grace and the other gal. I can't say her name, that's why I say the other gal. I do know her name. I'm just confidentiality. They were gonna graduate, and I was just gonna have this sweet little 10-year-old. She was so excited to have us all to ourselves, and we thought about fostering other kids coming in and out just for seasons of life. And I remember having lunch with Sharon on March 7th, 2017, and I was telling her about just what does God want? I have some ideas of what I want to do in this next season. And someone asked me if I'd be willing to speak at Biola University. I was like, oh, I would love that. God is releasing me into new territory. And I was just being honest with you, super excited about that. I didn't actually get asked to speak there. I got a phone call. I actually was at lunch with Sharon, and I was like, I'm just excited about this season because of all the freedom. And I sang it out loud. I did. I literally sang the word freedom. And walked over to Starbucks because of all this newfound freedom. And there was a voicemail, and I thought it was Biola. And it wasn't. It was Alameda County Adoptions. Hi, Mrs. Ingebretsen. The baby that you adopted nearly 10 years ago, her mother has given birth to another baby who is in foster care. He's 5 months old. Do you want to adopt him? Literally in 2 minutes conversation. And I just start crying, of course, because you can imagine I'm totally a crier. You know that already, don't you? And I start crying, and I just kind of literally, I mean, talk about a phone call that changes your life, and I just, my jaw dropped, and I was like, Jesus just told me to quit my job. I wonder if this is why. And she's like, well, do you need to talk to your husband? So I said, that's probably a good idea, and she quickly got off the phone. And I just was dumbstruck. The crazy thing is, we were in an open adoption with Kayla's birth mother for the first 8 years of her life. We regularly saw her. And then things got a little toxic, so we had to back off for a season. And in that season of us backing off, in those 2 years, she was got pregnant, had a baby, and lost this precious one to foster care. And the timing was completely hard to understand, because I'm like, why didn't we get him when he was a newborn? There was this loss in that, but also I realized that the way that God ordained this whole thing was definitely his plans because of how everything lined up. I'm not even going to belabor that. But this is the thing. I was so overwhelmed with this new normal, the adrenaline rush of getting everyone moved around in the house and a baby out of nowhere. And this just, and my job no longer there, that I just, like I said, found all this kind of identity in, and meaning and focus, and I felt needed there. And so here I am with this baby, and I was preparing to speak at this retreat here for October of 2017, and so I was like, I don't know what to do. And after I spoke at that retreat, I kind of crashed. And I was listening to a workshop that Kristen Klute, she's here this weekend, Kristen Klute gave a workshop that weekend, and I was listening to it. I was driving around with my little baby in the back seat, and I was driving around listening to this. And she goes, some of you are sitting here in this space, and you just have a word that you just have this word, and it just, you want to write it across the page. And I just started bawling. I immediately knew what that word was, and that word was stuck. I felt stuck. As much as Isaac was a complete and total blessing, we named him Isaac, which means laughter, by the way, and he embodies joy and laughter. But there was something about this season where I thought it was going to be something else, and so I felt stuck. Nothing to do with him, but yes, having to do with being home and being in my late 40s. I wasn't planning on that. I thought that season was over. I enjoyed that with my other, but I wasn't ready for that at 46 and 47. I was 47 at that time. And I just, this is the word, and I felt ashamed and guilty for feeling stuck with such a beautiful gift, just a resurrected dream. We'd always wanted a son, and here's the son, and it's amazing, and it's beautiful, and powerful, and look what God can do. And yet, the reality was I just didn't know what the next season held, and I just was stuck. Are any of you feeling stuck? I was grieving the life I had planned on living. As beautiful as this new life was and had the potential to be, it didn't feel beautiful. It felt hard. A teething baby. I mean, it was just hard. And as delightful as he was, I had this like, oh, this is not what I was expecting. I was there, but I wasn't consenting to be there. Have you ever done something but not really surrendered to it? Like, my whole heart loved Isaac, absolutely. And he took my breath away. And yet I had this part of me that kept going, oh, and wow, I'm going to be, when he's 10, I am not doing a science project. I am not doing a science project in my 50s, okay, or whatever. I was like, I'm going to be 64 when he graduates. There's not going to be an empty nester season. You know, all this stuff. You just start going, like, fast forwarding. Can we believe we're doing this? We would look at, what are we doing? And we just hadn't surrendered to the new normal, which is fine. That's a normal part of season. I can't judge that part of my journey. That's part of surrendering. But then you can't do that forever. At some point, this is the new normal, and we surrender to it. And then the joy comes to another level. But here's the thing that happened. I had been driving around to listen to the rest of Kristen's seminar. There's something about when she does a seminar on spiritual practice that every time I hear her, there's the anointing of the Spirit, and I get something. I just am like, ooh, okay, I hear or see something. And as I was driving around to complete the message, I got home and I swept up my little baby boy into my arms. So precious. And I was feeding him and rocking him to sleep, as was what I did every day. And the tears just were flowing, and I said, oh, Jesus, I'm going to bring this word to you. That was the invitation, to bring the word to Jesus. Jesus, I just feel stuck. I feel so guilty, because look at this incredible blessing that I don't deserve, and yet, oh, I feel stuck. And Jesus said, you're not stuck. You're being rooted. Literally. In my child's bedroom, in my spirit, you are being rooted. And all of a sudden, this fog lifted as I was given a complete shift in perspective. You are not stuck. I know it feels that way, baby girl, but you are being rooted. And specifically, you are being rooted in my love, because you have been thinking that you can do all these things for me. And I need you to just receive and be rooted in my deep, abiding love for you. And this little boy is the invitation to that space. This little boy is the invitation to a season of being rooted. Jesus wants us to give him our words, and he wants to give his perspective. I just love how he dropped that word into my soul. Sometimes you think you're being buried when you're really being planted. God is using this season to grow you. That's unashamed, Lisa Turkhurst. Did this mean that every moment on was just easy and bliss and, oh, I feel pretty? You know, I would know. But I just kept what God did, as he often does when he gives you a word like that or a picture, is he keeps bringing it in different ways. And so verses would come to my mind, like this one that we'll talk about tomorrow night. But blessed are those who trust in the Lord and have made the Lord their hope and confidence. They are like trees planted along a riverbank with roots that reach deep into the water. Such trees are not bothered by the heat or worried about long months of drought. Their leaves stay green and they never stop producing fruit. This is you, the Spirit invited. You are this tree. To be rooted is not the same thing at all as being tied down. To be rooted is to say, here I am, nourish, and here will I grow, for I have found a place where every sunrise shows me how to be more than what I was yesterday, and I need not wander to feel the wonder of my blessing. And then this one, may your roots grow down, go down deep. Go down deep into the soil of God's marvelous love. I sense an invitation to be more deeply rooted in that love. I love this one more quote. Don't think that the garden loses its ecstasy in winter. It's quiet, but its roots are riotous. And that's what God was doing in my life. Because in the very next season, he called me into a work of justice that he's never called me into before, in a way that I've never been able to. I'll share more about that tomorrow. He was doing things in this season, rooting. But I don't know that I would have ever gotten there had I not admitted where I felt I was. This little boy, oh my word. Can you even stand it? I know. And his personality, he's like super affectionate and loving. And the way he says, mama, I literally can't. He is just the embodiment of God's love and joy in my life, and literally is a herald of those things. And you all have that in one way or another. It doesn't have to be a child. There are heralds of joy in your life if you will open your eyes to see. This season shaped some of the most richest encounters I've ever had with God. Every nap time, I would go into that space without any phone. Because here's the thing about being a 48-year-old mother. You know how quick it goes. I dropped my daughter off at college and came home and gave my baby a bottle that night. I'm like, I'm going to blink, and I'm going to be dropping him off at college. So I decided to soak in it and take every moment in and savor those naptime bottle feedings because I knew that in minutes it would be over. And so I would go into that place and I would say, Jesus, I speak to me. And I am not being overdramatic. He spoke to me, and I can't remember a season of my life where God spoke to me more regularly than in that space every day, rocking Isaac to sleep, bringing people to my heart to pray over, just the insights, just all kinds of things. It was like, what are you going to show me today? That's how I was entering the space every day. What's so interesting, again, I want to just name this. What happened in that season is I believe I went from a season of a lot of striving. I mean, some receiving, but a lot of striving to a season of receiving from God. And it's changed the way I do all of the ministry in my life. Even for, like, as I prepared for this weekend, I'm like, what do you want? I want to receive the word that you have for these women. Because I can't come up with it. I've got to receive it from you. And so that was a big shift in that season of being rooted. Okay, well, I'm telling you this story because I want you to now look at your life and your story. It's the whole purpose of storytelling, is for you to recognize something of yourself or your story in it, some invitation from Jesus. Even with this profound, just kind of front row seat to God's work, I still had my personality. I'm just a go-getter, right? So I was tempted to rush through, not necessarily the baby stage, but I was tempted to rush through the what I would call a winter season. Let's get to the blooms, Jesus. Let's get to the greenery and the. I love spring. It's my favorite season. You know, where all the life is coming in spring. And I want. No. You're in a winter season. Wrap up in a blanket. Chill out and let me love you. We don't want to rush through the seasons that God has us in to get to the next one because we might miss what he has for us in this one. Here's the thing. We have an enemy who is a liar, and he's opposing the work of God in our lives all the time. His number one strategy that we know from John 8, you know, Jesus said, when you lie, you speak your native language. Like, that means that's what he does. He lies. So that's his strategy, is to lie to us. So if we know that his strategy is to lie and to pull out the roots of truth in our life, then one of the main things we can do, one of the greatest spiritual works of our lives, will be to correct with the truth of Jesus, what God says in his word, what God says about us. Throughout your life, you have been lied to. Some of you are sitting here in this room and you're still holding a word that was spoken over you when you were a little girl. Someone who named you something that was not true, and you're carrying it even today. You hold it with you, and it's part of your body and your spirit, and it's in there and embedded, and Jesus wants to take that out, and he wants to rename you. This is what God does. He renames us. But we have to name the lie. We have to name where it went wrong so that then he can fix it, change it. Or sometimes he can't fix stuff that happened to you before. Okay, he can't fix something that's already in the past. He can redeem it. He can heal you. He can restore you. He can give you a new perspective. And sometimes I think Jesus just wants to sit with you right there in the pain and validate and say, I see you and you are not alone. There's so many lies that we're up against as women. All the pictures that we see that we're bombarded with of what a woman is supposed to look like, and none of them are even reality. They're all airbrushed. What's crazy is that even Instagram, like my daughter has this friend who can like doctor up pictures. And they doctor up, they're like 18 and cute and perfect. And they're like, they want their lips to be bigger and their booties to be bigger and their waist to be smaller so they can fix all this stuff in there. I'm like, what? Give me high cheekbones. No, okay, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding about that. But honestly, I am making light of something that is absolutely destroying women all across the world. It's destroying us, and it's keeping us preoccupied with something when we have no time to be preoccupied with that because we have greater things to do for the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is pressing in through your life, and the enemy wants to go, oh, well, let's just be worried about this all day long. Oh, I'm so over it. All the lies of what you should look like, your worth, your value, your purpose. The enemy hisses because he knows that a woman living in truth, the truth that she is loved and free and filled with the Spirit of God, this woman is a powerful force in this world. I recently heard a story of freedom. It took my breath away, really. Some of you have probably heard of the story of Juneteenth. It's the oldest known celebration commemorating the ending of slavery in the U.S. I have to catch my breath from that previous bit of preaching. Hold on. Here's the thing. June 19th, 1865 is the day that the Union soldiers, led by General Gordon Granger, landed at Galveston, Texas. He landed with the news that the war had ended and that the enslaved were now free. Here's the thing. This is June of 1865. President Lincoln, the Emancipation Proclamation had become official on January 1st, 1863, 2.5 years before. That means these people were living enslaved even though they were free. They were actually free, but they didn't know it, so they couldn't live into it. Stories are told as to what kept them enslaved, from the messenger to Texas being murdered, to slave owners deliberately withholding news to get one more season of harvest on the backs of the slaves. This is evil. This is what evil does. It keeps us believing that we are not free. You are free, and you are loved. These define you. They define who you are, but the invitation always is to live in this truth, the reality of your freedom. Galatians 5:1 says, "Let me be clear, the Anointed One has set us free, not partially, but completely and wonderfully free. We must always cherish this truth and stubbornly refuse to go back into the bondage of our past. You are free from shame. You are free from fear, from worry. You are free from comparison. You are free from hurry. You are free from sin by the power of Jesus. When you trust, you place your trust in him, you're free from sin. You are free from your addictions. You are free from everything that was done to you that was wrong. Jesus wants to set you free. The liar says, no, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. And so, what if more than anything, Jesus simply wants you to believe? Jesus is ravished by your faith. If you look at through the Gospels, faith takes his breath away. I haven't seen anyone with this kind of faith, he says. Wow, your faith has healed. He's looking for trust and faith and believing what he says about you. Has to start with you being honest with where you are. And so that's what I want to invite you to do this evening. So I'd invite you to close your eyes for a moment. Just to reflect on your own life and your own story. The story that you find yourself right in the middle of as you come here tonight. Holy Spirit, come. First, I want to invite you to do what St. Ignatius invited people to do, and that is, first, notice God noticing you. I want you to notice God noticing you right where you are, right now. And I'd like for you to imagine Jesus making his way towards you tonight. Squeezing in between you and the woman sitting next to you. If he was to look deeply into your eyes with so much love that you're completely ravished with the joy of it. His arms are not crossed. His look is not stern. His eyes look into yours with deep love. He sees you, and he loves you, and he asks you this. My beloved daughter, what do you want me to do for you? Some others of you might want to write down a word. If you were to write a word across the story of your life, the chapter that you're living right now, what would that word be? If you were to write that word across your head or in the palm of your hand and you were to give it to Jesus, what might he do with it? What might he say to you? Jesus, I thank you so much that you ask us this question, what do you want me to do for you? You want to hear our heart. You want to hear our desires. You want to hear what's really going on in the deep crevices of our soul and our mind. And so I pray for anyone in this room who got some pictures of you, Jesus, that were not really you, but pictures that were of false images of you that other people have led them to believe. So God, right now, I pray protection against any false images of Jesus by the power of your Spirit. You said the Spirit would point us to you, Jesus. So we are claiming that promise over every person in this space that you would absolutely destroy any false image that we have of the one true Jesus, the perfect expression of God in human form, Jesus. I ask for the courage for everyone in this room, the courage to be honest with you, to name where we find ourselves tonight. And I thank you for the power of community, the power of these beautiful sisters together in this space. I pray that you would help us to be honest with one another and that you would bring healing as we confess to one another, that you would bring healing, that as we speak things and we bring it into the light, that the darkness would run and that you would break off bondage that has been there for way too long because we are already free. God, I pray that everyone in this space would live in that love and freedom and live being rooted like a tree in your truth. Thank you, Jesus, for what you want to do throughout this weekend. Thank you for how you're moving in this space right now. We love you, we trust you, and we say yes to you. In Jesus' name, amen.